Hello and welcome back to the Hoops Crush podcast. Today is episode number 30. We get to talk about everything that happened in free agency. The last time we talked to you was right before free agency was about to start. The draft had just happened. So we got a lot to cover today. As always, I am joined with Eric. Eric, how are you doing before we get into this jam-packed episode?
I'm good, Brady. It was like 100 degrees here in Portland today, so pretty hot day out there. But it's late at night. It's cooling down now. How are you doing?
I'm doing good as well. It has been pretty hot over here. Been raining quite a bit as well. But 4th of July is over, which is awesome too. So I hope everyone had a good 4th. Now it's just a matter of waiting on all the dominoes to fall this offseason. It feels like there's still some things that could potentially happen. But like I said, we're going to talk about a lot of the free agency signings that have happened. So if you had anything else to add before we get into it, or I could just get right into it. So
let's get into it. Yeah, we've got signings to talk about.
Yeah, so I think how I want to do it is I'm going to mainly focus on what the teams have done with the big signings. So for example, let's start with this. Paul George, he is leaving the Los Angeles Clippers. That's probably the biggest domino to fall, obviously, this offseason. He's leaving the Clippers, and that has been a trend this offseason with the second apron. That talent is leaving. A very rare max free agency signing, something we haven't seen in quite some time. The last good free agents that left to a new team was Jalen Brunson, and he wasn't Paul George's caliber, at least not in that moment. But of course, right. Yeah, you could say that. But the Sixers, they get Paul George in a 4-year max contract, so they give him the contract he wants. The Clippers were not willing to do it. They also, you know, keep Kelly Oubre around. They sign and trade Buddy Hield away. They get Eric Gordon. They get Caleb Martin, so it seems like they have kind of their starting five set in stone. And, of course, they get Maxey. So I feel like Daryl Morey kind of cooked this offseason. I really like what they've done, and I think they've made themselves a contender in the East because, while this new NBA is like you only really need two stars and a bunch of good role players, Paul George, of course, is a third star but also plays like a role player, can really, you know, an elite. You know, more than an elite role player, if you get what I'm saying. But, like, he's a good fit next to Maxey and Embiid. Exactly the kind of player you want. And I think the Sixers have done a great job. I did not think Paul George was actually going to leave the Clippers, but he does end up leaving. What are your thoughts on the 76ers, and how far do you think they can go? I know they may not be done, but based off what their starting five may look like, what do you think of them so far?
Yeah, so far in Paul George's career, he leaves the Pacers. I think they made at least one Eastern Conference Finals on the Pacers. I don't remember.
They made two in a row.
And then, it's hyped up. Him and Carmelo join Russell Westbrook, who had just carried the OKC Thunder after Durant left. They make the playoffs, and they add Carmelo and Paul George. And that team, I don't think, won a playoff series, right?
They won a game. But they got beat pretty quickly against Utah. A rookie Donovan Mitchell in that year.
And then they didn't have Carmelo the next year for the playoffs.
And that's when we eliminated them.
Yeah, so the Blazers eliminate them in five as well. I don't think it was a failure to trade for him because the Thunder end up with SGA because of it and that huge package, but then he goes to the Clippers, and whether you can say it was because of injuries or not, like, they still, I think if you said how much they gave up to get Kawhi and Paul George to come there, if you would have said they didn't even make a finals or whatever, I think most people would say that that wasn't a success then. And then they lose George for nothing now after giving up all that capital to get him.
Yeah.
But, like, he hasn't taken a team over the top by acquiring him. But in this situation, you have a young Maxey who's probably at this point just as good, if not a better player than Paul George. And then you have Embiid, who's obviously been in the running for, like, MVP the last couple of years outside of meeting the minimum games restriction, all that kind of stuff. It really just came down for me. Paul George is a third option, basically. It's gonna be determinant on health. If this team is healthy, I think they're dang good and can beat just about anyone in the East. And Maury still has a little bit of work to do filling out the depth chart. You can't go – they have a really strong top eight, I think. But you can't go into the season with relying on some of the guys they're relying on, both in terms of age and injury history, and not have more depth. So still kind of critical that they get a few minimum signings that are good fits there. There's still, I think, a lot of players that can help them out there on the free agency market. And so we'll see what they do there. Yeah, overall, though, I like that they had a plan to free up all this cap space this summer. They let players like Tobias Harris walk, and it rewards them by signing a big-time free agent. Now, we'll see if they have success with it, but I think you can't say between the Harden trade for them and now this trade, even going back to trading for Jimmy Butler and Al Horford signing and all that kind of stuff, you can't say that they haven't at least tried to win with Joel Embiid. So I think bottom line for me is Embiid needs to step up. He needs to be healthy first and foremost, but he needs to prove that he can take a team out of the second round. And now when you have running mates like Maxey and Paul George outside of injury, I don't think there's any more excuses for him.
Absolutely. So the 76ers are looking good. And as you mentioned, you can't say they haven't tried to build around Embiid. They've done a number of things. But the Clippers, on the other hand, they make the big package, or they send the big package to the Thunder. And, of course, the Thunder are reaping the awards of it and are going to continue to do so for a few
three
years.
3 more years.
Yeah, for 3 more years. So the Clippers respond by signing Derek Jones Jr. They get, like, Nicholas Batum. They get Chris Dunn. They get, like, Mo Bamba. So they're going to be
Kevin Porter Jr.
Yeah, Kevin Porter Jr. Forgot about him, too. And then they re-signed James Harden. Of course, Kawhi was extended during the season. So the Clippers are going to be a team that's going to be at least competitive, but I'm not really sure how far they go. I could see them easily being, like, a play-in team next year. The West is obviously super competitive. I just don't know where this road is about to lead to for them, because they're just in such a brutal spot. And, you know, if it wasn't for the second apron, they would have re-signed Paul George, wouldn't have been a problem, of course. But, yeah, overall, the trade was an absolute failure. You get Kawhi and Paul George, and no one blames you for that. We did give up a ton, and it rewarded you pretty much nothing. So now you're in, like, a really bad spot. You're opening the new arena, so that's cool and all. But the Clippers' future is really, really, really bad. Now, there will be ways they can maybe turn around. Maybe Kawhi is someone they could trade. Maybe that ends up happening in the future. Maybe Harden gets moved once again in his career. Russell Westbrook is still someone apparently they're going to try to trade away. He opted into his player option. Man,
Denver apparently wants him.
Yes, Denver. That would be interesting. But, man, I don't know where the Clippers are about to be next year. But, if I was a Clippers fan, which I don't know a single one, to be honest with you, I don't know how I would feel about the future of this team.
Yeah, they have the iteration with Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan. Redick was on that team for a while. They had a really good team. I don't think that team made it out of the second round. And then they have a couple years in between, and then they have this variation of the team with Kawhi and Paul George, Harden, all that kind of stuff. It's just really disappointing. I think they still do it again if you, even using hindsight, I mean, maybe not hindsight, but I think they still think it was the right play to go all in and get Kawhi and Paul George. It just didn't work out. And the 1 year where they did have a decent run, unfortunately, Kawhi gets hurt and isn't able to help them out in the playoffs. In the bubble, they kind of choke. I don't know what to do if you're the Clippers, because like you mentioned, they can't really rebuild or go young or anything, so they have to try to remain relevant. Plus, they're about to open a new arena and breaking off from the Lakers at, Crypto Arena now. used to be the Staples Center, but like they're trying to pave their own way. They can't, you can't do that with a uninteresting 20-win lottery team, right? Like you have to be star studded and you have to win games in LA to be relevant. So they have their work cut out from them. I think they can tread water for a couple of years as long as Kawhi and Harden are healthy. But I don't think their championship window is still open. I think it's slammed closed.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely closed. But the team they made a trade with, the Oklahoma City Thunder, gave a bag out, man. They gave a bag to Isaiah Hartenstein. Now, I knew Hartenstein was going to get a payday, but I didn't expect him to get around $30 million. Of course, they acquired Alex Caruso. We already knew that. They signed Isaiah Joe and Aaron Wiggins to long-term extensions, so they declined their options and, you know, signed them kind of similar to what the Pelicans did with Herb Jones. Right. But, yeah, Isaiah Hartenstein is a great signing for them. I think the third year is non-guaranteed, if I'm not mistaken, but I don't know that for a fact. But still, $29 million annually around a year for Isaiah Hartenstein was a lot more than I thought he was going to get. But the Thunder had some cap space to give, and I think that he is – he's going to be like, I think they can get out of his contract right when they're about to pay Chet and J-Dub, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that. But still, regardless, Isaiah Hartenstein exactly what they needed. And their draft was kind of different and weird. You know, those are guys that are probably going to be helpful in the future. But Isaiah Hartenstein, Alex Caruso, and then resigning Joe and Wiggins to long-term extensions is about as good as Sam Presti could have done. I mean, especially getting Caruso for only Josh Giddey, of course. And then, so they didn't really send any of their assets anywhere. So they still have all those assets to their name too. So the Thunder are, you know, got better and then still have all these assets. They're going to be terrifying once again next year.
Yeah, they were the number one seed or tied for it this year. And then they get rid of your favorite player, Josh Giddey.
Okay.
I know you're devastated about that because you wanted him to play like 40 minutes in the playoffs, right?
No, I did not.
Oh, it was the opposite, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, a lot of people, like yourself included, thought they should have benched Giddey in the playoffs, and that was a mistake when they took so long to do so. So, but that's the only player they lost, like that was relevant off this team. And you add one of the best perimeter point of attack defenders, guard defenders in the NBA and Caruso. And then you add someone who has just a great all around game in Hartenstein, can fit in to pretty much any system. I think he's going to be just a great fit from the beginning. And I don't think they're going to miss a beat trying to incorporate these two players. And so, yeah, it's just kind of crazy that they got that much better. We knew they needed a big man depth, and to get someone the quality of Isaiah Hartenstein, even though you had to overpay for him, I think it's worth it considering they didn't have to give up any future picks or anything. And then on top of that, like you mentioned, they had a weird draft, but they take someone who for a lot of the year was – potentially the number one pick or up there, right up there at the top of the draft, in Nikola Topic, who is like, they just have as a luxury sitting on the bench now, can take their time and develop him and maybe use him as a trade asset in the future or use him to trade someone else on their team or whatever. But like, yeah, just bountiful riches there in OKC. And it's still to come whether other teams make moves to keep improving. We'll get to Dallas in a minute, but you have to think with how good of a year OKC had, and considering their age and what they just added, I don't see how many teams could be better than them, at least in the regular season next year.
Yeah, the Thunder, they're going to be very good next year and very good for the foreseeable future. So one of the other big free agency names that were out there, because this free agency class, you know, while it had some good names, but, you know, a lot of the guys were re-signed early on. Just to touch on them just really quickly, the Orlando Magic have spent quite a bit of money this offseason, mainly on their own guys, though. But, of course, the big addition was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. They needed more perimeter shooting, and I think KCP was a great addition for them in that fact. I still think they should have gotten a perimeter shot creator. They haven't done that yet. Maybe they do that in the future, but overall, like I said, they re-sign a lot of their guys, so a lot of money. Isaac gets a 5-year extension. Franz Wagner gets his 5-year extension. Mo Wagner comes back on an extension. You got Gary Harris gets extended, and Goga Badadze. So basically, they brought back all their own guys and then re-signed KCP, which KCP addition is phenomenal, don't get me wrong. But I still wish they would have done maybe something a little bit more, but that's still maybe to be determined to come, you know, maybe soon for them.
Yeah, they still have a lot of assets they can trade, and now they have a lot of contracts that won't be tradable until at least December or January in some of their cases. But, you know, they have the pieces now to move in trades. So maybe if they're struggling this year to recapture some of the magic they had, I guess pun intended, this year, like they can do so. But yeah, I am a little underwhelmed with what they did. I think KCP was a great addition, but I don't know. It just seems weird that that was their only addition, considering how badly they needed shooting. And like you said, a creator type. And now you have two forwards in Banchero and Franz that can create. I guess maybe they're just going to be relying on them more to be those creators. But yeah, maybe Suggs can. He had a really good improvement from the year previous to last year. So maybe he can take on a little bit more of that responsibility. I believe Fultz is still a free agent. I don't know if they're going to eventually re-sign him or what, but he fell out of favor for them towards the end of the year. So, yeah, just kind of weird. It almost – I mean, the KCP thing was different than what the Kings did, but it kind of reminds me of, like, how the Kings were, what, the third seed 2 years ago and then don't make the playoffs last year because they didn't, in my mind – do enough to improve. They just kind of ran it back, and it feels kind of similar to that plus KCP. And yeah, I don't know if that's enough to make them. I don't think they're as good as like Philly, Boston. Yeah, I still don't think they're in that range. Milwaukee, if they're healthy, is better. I think Cleveland re-signing Donovan Mitchell, so that's not hanging over them. I think they're still better than Orlando. But yeah, it's I do like KCP. I just feel underwhelmed that that was it.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely agree with that. But the team that just made it to the NBA Finals also had a really terrific offseason. We already talked about how the Mavericks got Quentin Grimes in that trade with Tim Hardaway. But they also got Najee Marshall as well in free agency because Derrick Jones departed to L.A. And then they win the free agency battle with Klay Thompson, choosing them over the Lakers, even turning down less money. You know, for Mavericks fans, that has to feel incredible because I remember for years and years on in, they'd be in free agency battles and always lose them. Obviously, everyone remembers the notorious DeAndre Jordan situation back when DeAndre Jordan was still very good. But like I said, they win the battle to get Klay Thompson to join them in Dallas. And I absolutely love what the Mavericks have done this offseason. Klay playing off of Kyrie and Luka, I can't imagine the kind of looks he's going to get. I know the last, you know, taste we got of him was 0-10 in an elimination game. So everyone has the, you know, worst possible remembrance of him right now. But just remember, Klay is still a solid player. He's looking for a fresh start. He said playing in LA was too similar to playing in Golden State, and I'm excited for this Mavericks team. I think they're going to be a lot of fun. They were already good last year. I think Klay Thompson is fun, Najee Marshall, Quentin Grimes. The Mavericks have done an incredible job, even when I didn't know if they'd be able to do a whole lot, but they keep adding, man, and they're going to be fun next year.
Yeah, it was kind of weird when they made the Grimes trade. It seemed like they were doing so to clear up the space to offer to Derrick Jones, and then he signs with the Clippers. I think Najee Marshall is a really good underrated player. I really like that signing. At the same time, I think they're going to be, it's going to be a little different without the lob threat that Derrick Jones was, as we know how good Luka is at throwing lobs, and he still has Gafford and Lively, of course, but just having those dynamic players that can get on the fast break and get to the basket quickly, I think that'll be a bit of a loss more than people are talking about. But you had Klay Thompson. I think if Clay was going to revitalize his career and his name, and people are going to start putting some respect back on his name, I think this is a good place to do it. If he can't do it here with Kyrie and Luka setting him up and spacing the floor, I don't think he would be able to do it many other places. Right. So I think this is a perfect spot for him. I like that Dallas didn't just say, oh, we made the finals, we can just re-sign people and run it back. I think they made some good, smart moves, and I think it made sense both cap-wise and should make sense on the court as well.
Yeah, Clay, Dallas is going to get a ton of good looks, but obviously the team that lost him, the Golden State Warriors, responds with a few moves of their own, which are all very kind of interesting. I'm not really sure what to think of the Warriors going into next year. They kind of remind me of the Clippers in a way. The Warriors aren't, right. Their future isn't as bad, and they got the championship, so it's like no one really cares that much. But Kyle Anderson goes to the Warriors, and I think that was in a sign and trade. Buddy Hield goes to the Warriors as well, also a sign and trade. And then D'Angelo.
Yeah, they kind of mixed all the Klay Thompson thing in with like six other.
Yeah, I saw that. Like six team trade. We thought we were cool doing it in the mock off season, but it happens in real life too. But the Warriors, they get a few good role players. They're gonna run it back with Steph. They immediately turn their attention to trying to get Lauri Markkanen. Nothing has come of that yet. There's a bunch of teams that would like his services. Danny Ainge, of course, knows that. So I assume if Danny Ainge is to trade Markkanen, he's going to get a crazy return. And the Warriors, you know, they try to get Paul George. That didn't happen. The Clippers didn't want to send him there. So, yeah, I'm not really sure what to think of this Warriors team. They kind of remind me, like I said, exactly like the Clippers, where they have that star player, you know, Steph, Kawhi. Steph is obviously not as injury prone as Kawhi is, but it's not enough. You look at the roster, it's not enough. You know, like I said, the difference is the Warriors have all the championships, so it's not that big of a deal. While the Clippers were searching for a championship, but you know, as much as people want to see Steph compete for rings in probably the last few moments of his career, I don't know if they're going to be able to do it.
Yeah, I don't think they're a championship level team. I kind of agree with you. Their moves are just kind of like, it makes sense, but like, I don't know how well Kyle Anderson fits with that, with like Draymond, you know? So I think they had Pods and Trace Jackson Davis, Kuminga still young. All those guys played well at times last year. So if you get a jump from those guys, maybe, and then you still have Steph, and then you, in theory, replace Clay shooting with Buddy's shooting. I don't think they're worse than last year, really, but I don't know. Unless Kuminga or Pods or somebody takes a huge jump, I don't see how they're better than last year either.
Yeah, like the Clippers and the Warriors are two teams that I'm like wondering, like when we do at the end of the day, when, you know, the offseason is pretty much over and every team is done making moves, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where I would put those two teams when we do our final, you know, predictions of what the Western Conference will look like. And, you know, just right now without looking at it, I'm wondering if I'm even going to have them in the playoff picture. Probably won't if I had to think right now. But like I said, I haven't really looked at it in full yet. So maybe, I don't know. We'll see. But another California team, the Los Angeles Lakers, struck out on Klay Thompson. They pretty much only have re-signed LeBron. They drafted Bronny, of course, got Dalton Connect. But, you know how Lakers fans are. They want another guy here. They have not been able to get that. Now, LeBron James extension re-signed just came out today to where now they are still $3 million under the second apron. He took a $3 million pay cut, I guess, for that to happen. So there still, in theory, could be a move for the Los Angeles Lakers. Obviously, they've been in on guys like Jeremy Grant, Cameron Johnson, Dorian Finney-Smith, Kyle Kuzma. We'll see if they want to fork over the assets to get one of those guys. But, yeah, the Lakers, I mean, it looks like they may run it back. And, you know, they obviously got swept last year, so I'm not really sure that's the right plan of action to go with. But Rob Pelinka is, you know, in a way, I don't blame him because he's thinking about the future after LeBron. But since you have him and you're committed to him, you know, maybe you should not be so like hesitant to trade draft picks, but I don't know.
I know it's so weird. LeBron's going to turn 40 this season. They have the good moves of the trade deadline 2 years ago where they pick up Vanderbilt and D'Angelo Russell and all that kind of stuff. And then they don't do anything really last offseason. Their draft pick, Jalen Hood-Chifino, doesn't really help them. He was injured for part of the season too, but like he wasn't going to play or anything. And so like then they don't do anything at the trade deadline, even though it was pretty obvious they needed to make a move. So like now they're just going to do the same exact thing they did last offseason and draft someone in the mid-teens. And Dalton Knecht is theoretically much more useful as a player right now for the Lakers than Jalen Hood-Chifino, but it just seems kind of weird that they'd follow the same path as last offseason that did not work at all. And then you have this old LeBron who's maybe going to play one or two more years, and you're just going to like not do anything else to help him win. Like it feels like there's just not people on the same page. And then, but like at the same time, why is he taking less money than he could get to help the Lakers stay under that second apron? I feel like if they don't make a move, that's just like spitting in his face for
exactly
staying there and stuff. So I feel like they have to make a move, but they've been really hesitant to give up those future picks. So I don't know if they will or not, but that's pretty much the story of the rest of the offseason, is if they are going to make a move or not. I can't think of a bigger storyline right now than what the situation in LA is.
Especially for us Blazers fans, because we know on the forefront, Jeremy Grant has been heavily considered to potentially be a target for the LA Lakers. You know, been talked about by Anthony Erdwin a lot on Twitter. You know, I think you and I are in agreement, correct me if I'm wrong, that we would love to see Grant be sent out of this team to maybe go a little bit younger here. And if we get the right return for Jeremy Grant, which Joe Cronin at the moment apparently is asking for 2 first-round picks, does he come down on the asking price? We'll see. Does Rob Pelinka just fork over the picks, or do they pivot to another guy? All will be very interesting to watch as Blazers fans to see if the Lakers end up doing anything. They could take it to the trade deadline, of course, maybe. They did that last year. It kind of reminds me of, like, it's obviously not to the same degree, but like where Joe Cronin or Neil O'Shea would just kick the can down the road and be like, oh, we'll do something that summer or next time. And that's what Pelinka told LeBron and them at the deadline. Oh, we're going to have 3 tradable first-round picks in the offseason. Mm-hmm. That's when we'll make our move. And, you know, they may do it still this offseason. I feel like there's still a lot. You know, one guy I think they should consider, just because you might be able to get a draft pick on top of it, not that he's like the perfect guy for them, but maybe they should just go get LaVine, especially if they can get a first-round pick on top of getting LaVine. That might be the best thing they could do.
Well, I think I agree with her, but I think they have trouble
matching salary.
Trading out like 3 or 4 guys to make it work. Yeah, it's just tough. Yeah, because LaVine's making like $43 million or something. It's insane. LeBron did say today that Dalton Knecht was his second favorite college player to watch this year behind Bronny. So he got his 2 favorite college players on his team now, but you know, that's not enough for LeBron. And I don't understand. Like, how do you kick the can down the road when LeBron's about to be 40? Like, it makes no sense.
It does not make any sense. I don't know what they're going to do, man. I hope they make a move, you know, especially if it involves Jeremy Grant. That'd be awesome. But, man, it's going to be interesting to see if they just be like, okay, we're just going to run it back, see what happens. You know, they're going to be good enough, I think, to make the playoffs, but they struggled just in regular season last year, and LeBron is only older now. Like, they were a play-in team last year. I mean, I don't know, man. We'll see what they do.
And Anthony Davis was relatively healthy too, for him. So like, you can't expect that to be the case every season either.
Exactly.
They need some help.
Yeah. All right. So
I mean, I'm fine with them sucking, but
yeah. Me too. Me too. So obviously, the big thing that happened tonight is DeMar DeRozan is officially going to the Sacramento Kings in a sign and trade. It'll be interesting to talk about this from all 3 different angles, because you know, when we talked about the Josh Giddey trade, you were telling me they were going to re-sign DeMar DeRozan and run it back and all be, you know, just try to be competitive. And I'm glad that they didn't re-sign DeMar because it would have made no sense. But they get Duarte in a couple seconds. So they get something, I guess. It's nothing crazy, but, you know, maybe they could have gotten more if they traded him earlier. But DeRozan to Sacramento is at least interesting. I'm not really sure it makes them a contender or a, you know, scary contender in the West compared to some of these West teams that we have right now. But, you know, I've been saying, please don't just stay complacent and do nothing. And they've done something. And it didn't, like, cost them a ton to get DeRozan. So I can't really fault them for this. It's one of those moves where it's like, yeah, you know, it's great that you did it. And you should have done it because, like, it didn't cost you anything. And you needed to get better. And DeRozan definitely makes you better. But I'm not really sure if that's going to turn into anything. Chicago finally looks like they're going to go rebuild mode. They'll try to keep sending LaVine out. We'll see if they end up accomplishing that. And then San Antonio also gets involved as Barnes is heading to San Antonio. So that might be their wing for a little bit, starting next to Wemby, I guess. Maybe. We'll see what they end up doing with that. But yeah, very interesting sign and trade that happened. I think I don't mind DeRozan in Sacramento, though.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a clunky fit with Fox and Sabonis, I think. None of those guys being, like, really consistent, dependable three-point shooters. At least you have Keegan there to spread the floor a little bit. And if Devin Carter, who's not going to play summer league, unfortunately, but if he's healthy, their rookie, you'd think he could maybe help space the floor as well. So, yeah, it's a cool name, I guess. I don't know how it's going to work with those big three, but I do like that they went for it. DeRozan's just like one of those guys who's just a weird fit on almost any team.
Exactly.
So it's like hard to just picture how he'll fit in. It just seems, I'm just having a hard time like thinking of like what that offense and defense is going to look like next year. But Mike Brown's a good coach. There was some rumors that they might get rid of him after the season, which I think would have been insanely dumb.
But
they kept him, signed him to an extension. And I think he'll figure out how to work. And I actually think that they're in a little better position to maybe be a playoff team. Maybe it's because some of the teams got worse around them. So they might just move up by default. But I like this move in terms of stabilizing their playoff chances. I don't think it allows them to be like into that next tier where you're actually in the thick of things for a championship. But I think you're pretty solidly in the playoff mix right now.
Yeah, agreed. Exactly how I would have said it too. And then I guess something we didn't talk about is Chris Paul. You know, we kind of brought up how the Spurs were involved in this. Chris Paul signed with the Spurs. So the Spurs have added now Harrison Barnes and Chris Paul. They also trade Devontae Graham out to the Hornets. So they've done a few things this offseason. But Chris Paul, I mean, they've been looking for a point guard, you know, or I guess, you know, they just got Wemby. So it's not like they've been searching for years or anything. But last year, Chris Paul, or the point guard situation was not good. They tried so on there. It didn't really work out. Chris Paul, of course, is exactly the kind of point guard you'd want. He's not the same Chris Paul he used to be. But, you know, having him on a one-year deal to mentor Stephon Castle and playing with Wemby, I think, is going to be fun and very awesome. I don't know if that's going to make them a playoff team or anything like that. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me because Wemby is that good. It wouldn't like, shock me if they were a playing team or something. But, I mean, the Spurs, I think that was a good signing for them. Chris Paul gets waived by the Warriors. I mean, he was apparently offered to Chicago for LaVine, and the Warriors said no. They didn't even want to get Zach LaVine. So, that's pretty much all the – am I forgetting about anything else that has happened this free agency period?
Well, along the lines of the Spurs real quick, don't be surprised if they're the team that ultimately ends up with Lauri Markkanen.
Oh, yeah.
I know that one of the reasons they were open to taking on Harrison Barnes is because he matches Lauri's contract almost perfectly. And
He does right now. That's actually very true.
They have a bunch of picks, including all the Hawks picks, the next couple of years. They have all their own future first. They got Minnesota's 2031 first, I think, with the Rob Dillingham 8th pick trade. So they have a lot of pick assets, and I think that's what Utah's looking for. It seems like it's kind of a weird move for the Spurs, but if you think about it, I think getting Markkanen, along with, like you said, Chris Paul is a vet mentor. Castle played his first summer league game today, looked really nice, looked comfortable even pulling up off the dribble, shooting threes and stuff like that, which was one of his biggest concerns. That team could take an insane OKC-type jump very soon with how good some of their pieces are. And if you add Markkanen to that, that's a pretty deadly team. So it'll be interesting to see if they go all in with that roster right now, or if they wait another year, add another draft pick, see how good Castle is and stuff like that, and just kind of let things play out. So that's behind the Lakers. I think where Markkanen ends up is probably the second biggest storyline left of this offseason.
Yeah, so I was about to say that's probably a good transition, because Markkanen seems like the golden prize right now in the offseason, that a lot of teams are wanting his services. The Warriors have been interested. You know, a lot of us wanted to see him go to the Oklahoma City Thunder. That probably isn't going to happen. I guess they could still make it happen technically with Lou Dort's salary, and they still have the assets to do it. And then, as you mentioned, I didn't even think about that, but Barnes does match Markkanen's contract almost perfectly, and they have the assets pulled off. Now, I did see, I believe, a Jazz reporter, I think his name is like Tony Jones or something like that, mentioned how, and this might be an older article, or maybe he's updated it since, but it mentioned how the Jazz feel comfortable with how many draft picks they have, so they're wanting more like players or something like that, which is why I thought maybe they do have a bunch of like young wings already as it is. They obviously just drafted Collier, so maybe they're still looking for a young guard potentially. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see who ends up, you know, if they trade Markkanen. I think trading Markkanen would ultimately probably be the right move for them. I understand trying to keep him, but with how valuable he is right now, I think it ultimately feels like Danny Ainge could get like a crazy return for him. Just because like his contract is incredible at the moment, $18 million right. for what he's doing last year. And, you know, a team would want to trade for him and then potentially extend him. Man, like Utah is sitting in a good spot because like they have a lot of young talent, but Markkanen's probably not going to be a guy that's going to help them contend. I just don't think their young talent will be ready around the time, you know, with how good Markkanen is right now. So I think they're probably in a spot where they should trade Markkanen, and a lot of teams are going to line up for that. So I'm curious to see where Markkanen ends up, if it is San Antonio, if it is Golden State for whatever reason. But man, it's going to be interesting to see if Danny Ainge will trade him, because, you know, Danny Ainge is going to excrete as much value as possible for him, and it's going to take a crazy return, I imagine, to get Markkanen.
Yeah, it's got to be a team that feels comfortable maybe paying him a max. We saw the OG trade result in New York having to overpay for him. So I think any team that trades for him is going to have to similarly dish out a 4 or 5 year deal for the max. And I mean, Laurie's been on a really good contract the last few years, so he's probably worth it. But I don't think the Jazz want to necessarily pay him. And I don't think as good as, even if you think they're building a good roster there, still don't think it has like championship upside in the end. So I agree with you. I would just go fully young and just keep building your asset pool out that way.
Well, I think that's pretty much all the free agency news. You know, it feels like there's more, but that's pretty much all the main storylines. Unless if there's anything else I'm forgetting. Can you think of anything else I'm forgetting? But I'm pretty sure that's...
We didn't talk about many teams in the East, but not many teams did anything.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. It feels like this offseason has been relatively quiet, but there's been some, you know, moves here and there. Is there, like, I guess let me ask you, is there any team you're disappointed in that hasn't done anything at this moment? Is there anybody?
Well, if I'm a Laker fan, I'm disappointed in them.
Yeah, that, of course. But is there outside of the Lakers?
The Bucks got Torian Prince. Did they sign anyone else? I feel like they signed, they got DeLon Wright as well.
Yeah.
I think two good signings, but I still like want them to do just a little more to tweak that roster. I didn't think they should just kind of mess with the fringes. I thought they needed to make like one kind of jolting move, whether that's trading Brooke Lopez or Bobby Portis or somebody like that. I felt like they just needed to shake it up a little bit. So it's probably disappointing for them. Miami lost Caleb Martin today. Apparently turned down a much bigger contract a week ago. And I don't know.
That was a week ago? I thought someone said that was like during the season.
I thought I heard that they offered
it
to him again.
If it was a week ago, he's
like,
an idiot.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
They misplayed the market on that big time. But I don't know. I think they've made a couple moves too, but like nothing earth shattering. So if you're a Miami Heat fan, you're probably thinking, what the heck? Are we really just going to run back this same thing again? But if they're healthy, they're good, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's most of that I've been disappointed in is the teams that I think needed to make a move and didn't really. The Cavs, I think you can say they make the coaching change, so that should be a little different. And then they make, the great or like it erases all the question marks from the team basically by re-signing Donovan Mitchell. I mean, it does bring up some other question marks, but that was the big domino for them that has been looming over the team since they traded for him is, will he stick around? And now that you've done that, you can focus on keeping the other guys happy and building that team out. But I'm still kind of underwhelmed that they didn't do anything this summer. So,
at least to this point.
Yeah.
Which is why it feels like there's just so many things that could still happen.
Right.
There's just so many teams just sitting here and haven't done anything yet.
But the problem is the new rules, I think.
Yeah.
It's like teams know that if they traded, like Golden State, you brought up how they didn't want LaVine and they could have gotten him for basically free with player like Chris Paul, who they cut anyway. But like they can't do anything then if they have that $43 million contract along with their other contracts they have. So I think a lot of teams are stuck in this situation where like Cleveland would love to trade for a better starting small forward right now, but they can't really afford to pay that person along with Jared Allen and eventually Evan Mobley and what they're paying Garland on a max and Donovan Mitchell on a max now. So, or he was on a max, but even more in the future. So, I think that's hampering a lot of teams. We heard the Clippers say this when they let Paul George go, that they feel like the better thing moving forward is to not be so far into the tax to where you're messing with all those things and can't sign anyone. So it's really interesting to see moving forward if there's a team that just says, screw it, we'll deal with the consequences. It could probably get some value in trades that normally wouldn't happen, but it also will hamper them from doing future moves. So like, I don't know how teams are going to strategize that moving forward. But I think that's been most of the main reason why you haven't seen some of these teams make moves that are like straddling those aprons.
Yeah, so like the team that you mentioned was Milwaukee Bucks. I know they signed along Ryan Prince, which is nice, but I do want to see them maybe shake things up, but there may not be the right move. So like
right.
As much as you'd want to see them do it, it may not be out there like for it to happen. And then another team, which might be unfair to say this about them, but I feel like the Indiana Pacers should do a little bit more, but at the same time, like just because like maybe they do something with the deadline, but I think what they did this year was a little, you could pretty much compare it to when the Blazers made it to the conference finals, but it was a little bit different because, as much as like MPJ didn't play in that series back then, he wasn't like really established yet at all. And then for Indiana, you didn't have to deal with Giannis. Dame gets out. And then the Knicks, of course, broke down in the second round. So I like to see them do a little bit more, but, maybe they do something at the deadline. That might be unfair, like I said. But, yeah, Miami, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they get Alec Burks, I guess. But, you know.
Like I said, underwhelming.
Yeah, it's very underwhelming. Overall, underwhelming. But that's like.
The Hawks haven't done much.
Yeah, and the Hawks could still trade out a lot of guys. Like, the Suns got their point guard in Monte Morris at the moment, which is.
Well, that was a good signing.
Yeah, something they needed for sure. And, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much. I mean, Jonas Valanciunas to the Wizards was a little weird, but I understand it because the Alex Starr is going to be playing power forward, so you wanted like a bruising five to take all the, you know, bruising matchups or whatever. But that's
so weird, though.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I don't really have anything else for this episode. I mean, it felt like there was going to be more to talk about, but
yeah, we still have the. I mean, assuming the Brandon Ingram market will heat up now as well. Now that DeRozan signed, and that should probably take the Kings off as a trade destination for Ingram.
So, at least.
see what team he goes to if unless New Orleans ends up keeping him. But yeah, I think teams are kind of settling in now to Summer League. That's another window where some deals get done because a lot of the GMs are there talking and stuff like that. So maybe something will happen with some of those guys during Summer League.
It'll be good to just focus on Summer League this year. Last year was painful.
Yeah. All the Dame stuff looming over.
They're
going to
meet at Summer League. They didn't meet. Like, it's just so annoying, but I'm glad that's over.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Summer League, I wanted to get your thoughts on one Scoot Henderson. And the Blazers deciding not to play him in Summer League. Do you think that's the right decision, or do you think that's a mistake, or do you have any thoughts on that?
I think I saw a lot of people arguing about it in the group chat. I personally don't have like a crazy opinion on it. I think it would have been beneficial for him to play just because, you know, he didn't have the greatest rookie year, but I also understand, like, you know, his stock was the third overall pick and he's, you know, a generational talent. So maybe he didn't feel the need to play. I don't know if I like have a strong opinion about it. I think he should have played, but it's not like it doesn't like over the top piss me off that he's not playing. And I know some people felt that way. But yeah, so
Brandon Miller's playing second pick.
Oh, is he?
And he had
that.
A better. Yeah.
I know that actually.
Obviously Wemby's not playing and, you know, there's some guys that coming off injuries that aren't playing, but yeah, a lot of the rookies from last year, even if they had good years, like Cam Whitmore and stuff, I think is going to play. And now who knows how many games they'll play. It might only be a game or two. And then, like Keegan Murray last year played in a couple of games in the California Classic. I think he scored like 46 points in one of them. And they just were like, okay, dude, you're too good for Summer League. But that's, so I'm not upset that Scoot's not going to play. So don't misconstrue this, people, on me like being like pissed off that he's not playing and I'm throwing a temper tantrum or something. That's not what I'm doing here. For me, though, I was a little disappointed because I really want to see what he's been working on, how he's been improving. The first Summer League game is almost 3 months to the day from their last regular season game here in Portland. I don't think he'd been played in that one, so it'd be over 3 months since he played. So I would like to see what he was working on. And to me, it would have made it much more hype the rest of this offseason if we had a similar thing to Keegan in that Scoot came in, just dominates a couple games in Summer League, and then bows out and be like, no, see, we're good. Scoot's fine.
Cool for sure.
And now you had the rest of the summer to hype him up, right? And then going in. So to me, it makes me wonder, are the Blazers trying to hide or kind of protect him from the opposite happening where he comes in and struggles in Summer League and then there's all this talk about how he isn't improving and if he has just one bad game or whatever, then you know, like, oh, these people last year, he's such a bust and all that stuff will come out of the woodwork again and pile on him and it could ruin his confidence heading into the next season. So maybe part of me is thinking they're trying to kind of shelter him from that criticism. I don't like that personally. like I said, I'm not upset or pissed off about it. I'm just a little disappointed that they didn't at least want to see him in a game or two and start building some continuity with their top draft pick, Donovan Clingan. Maybe work some pick and rolls, just see how that looks. Would have liked to get a little feel for that. And I feel like Scoot, if he really is improving, should have been able to come in and really show something here this summer in a game or two and be like, okay, we got a good one here. Now maybe we can talk about Anthony trades or whatever. Whereas now it's like, okay, well, do they think he's just that good that he doesn't need to play summer league, which would be weird considering how this first season went, or they just not put any stock in summer league. I understand if you feel that way, but I do. I'm the type of person who wants people to be competitive and play all the time. And this might not have been Scoot's decision. So I'm not going to say he's not competitive because he's not playing. But to me, it's just, I don't know. I would want every opportunity I can to get some minutes and reps against competition. I'm just a little disappointed that we're not going to see that.
So I feel like there's a lot of ways you can interpret this. And the first reason you explained out, I hope that's not the case, because then we could be absolutely doomed that they don't believe in him to show out in summer league. That would be a terrifying situation if that's how they feel about him. That would really suck. So yeah.
For the record, though, I don't have anything like someone telling me that's how they feel. It's just like that's pops into my mind, right? Like when it happens.
But. Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I hope that's not the case. That would really be unfortunate. So, yeah. Again, I don't have like a crazy strong opinion, but I definitely understand like the argument for like why, you know, what you said. Like, hopefully, it's not. They don't think he would be good in summer league again or something, or they're still struggling behind the scenes, or what they're seeing is, I don't know, man. I'm just hoping that's not the case. He improved a lot last year, and you know, it would have been nice to see. But yeah, we only get to really watch our one rookie. We thought we'd maybe have two or three, four rookies to watch in summer league, but now it's only Clingan. I guess we get to watch Repair though, which is kind of cool, but
yeah, that's the other disappointing part. I mean, Clingan, I mean, think whatever you want about him, but I don't know if he's going to be like super exciting to watch in summer league, you know, with that style of play. And then
what if he comes out just like banging threes like crazy?
That'd be cool, I guess. Yeah. But like him as the showcase, obviously he's our top draft pick. So I do want to see him. Don't get me wrong. But like, it's basically him, Rupert, Chris Murray, and then a bunch of people who, I mean, there might be some two-way guys like Justin Manaya and I don't know how to pronounce his name. The other guy we have on Exhibit 10 contract might be a two-way. I think it's like spelled C-H-U-I, but I think it's pronounced Key or something like that. So like, yeah, there's some interesting people, I guess. But overall, considering how awesome summer league's been for several years for the Blazers, I just the roster this year just didn't stick out to me as like, oh man, that's like gotta tune in and watch that. I mean, I will still watch it, but it's not like, oh my god, I have to see Shaden Sharpe play or Scoot play or whatever, you know. And I know they got hurt at the beginning of both summer leagues, so maybe that's another thing.
I was about to say, do you think maybe the reason for not playing Scoot is because he got hurt in summer league last year? I guess
maybe, but there's still 3 months till the season starts, so like, yeah, I don't know. If like you're scared of people getting hurt, like I don't know how much stock you can put into that. I do understand if they get hurt in a meaningless summer league game for no reason, it's bad, but like, most of our games in the regular season are meaningless too. So like, does it really matter? Like if we have injuries too, like it helps us maybe capture the flag next draft. So I don't know, man. I don't think it's like, I don't know. To me, I wouldn't play scared like that. I would rather see people play. But I mean, I understand thinking that way though.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's it, though, unless you have anything else to add.
No, should be fun. Do you watch Summer League games at all?
Yeah, I do. I watched a little bit of the Lakers thing, but I got bored very quickly, and I didn't realize that Stephon Castle played today, or I would have watched that. That's my fault. But Yeah, no, I watched Summer League for sure.
Nice. Yeah, the Warriors played after the Lakers game, and they just, like, destroyed. Or did they get destroyed? I forgot, but that game was a blowout. But the Kings have, like, two teams, so it's like...
I know, I saw they played, like, twice. That was
like, how many, like, Summer League guys do you need? I know they don't have two teams in the Vegas one, but, yeah. But yeah, it's, I like Summer League. I don't like make drastic conclusions on if someone's good or not. Like Brandon Miller struggled in Summer League last year, was fine in the regular season, but a lot of people like thought he was a bust already after right. Summer League. Scoot gets off to a really good start and then gets hurt. And so that was unfortunate. Didn't really get, I think we got like 4 or 6 minutes of sharp the year before.
Yeah.
But like, I like watching people play. I like watching people compete for roster spots and things like that. And it's not like a huge part of the puzzle of a player, but I do think, you know, it's a small, like you can be like, oh, this guy looks really nice. He's got good instincts. He moves well within this team's offense or something, or this draft pick looks like he could be a surprise. But then you also have sometimes where there's players that are like, they just look awful. Like Nicholas Batum, his rookie year played in Summer League. It looked like he was years away from being an NBA player. And then he ends up starting like the whole season for the Blazers. And so, yeah, it's, you can never read too much into it, but I enjoy watching it. But yeah, as someone who enjoys scouting and watching all these draft picks in college and stuff like that or overseas, it is fun for me to just then have another step to the evaluation process and see how they do playing with NBA rules and stuff like that. So I think it's fun in my mind, but I understand it's kind of boring because like a lot of these players aren't going to be playing in the NBA as well.
All right, guys, I hope y'all enjoyed this episode. We will see y'all next week. And we'll see if we have any other moves happened. I'm sure we'll get at least something, but maybe we get a big one. We shall see.
Yeah.
But thank y'all for watching. We will see y'all in the next one. As always, peace out.